This show was first broadcast on Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. For more information on Fresh FM, as well as links to other great locally produced programs, go to our website, freshfm.net.
Hello and welcome. I'm Galen Pound, and you are listening to Top Writers. In a few moments, I will be talking to Marlborough Sounds writer Marion Day. Marion has won numerous awards for her writing, including being shortlisted in the 2011 Storylines Joy Cowley Award, and her short story 40 Bars of Soap was shortlisted for this year's Page and Blackmore Nationwide Competition. But first, we are going to hear from Dana.
This is Dana Wensley, and you're listening to Top Writers. I'm the Freedom of Speech spokesperson for PEN in New Zealand. PEN is a worldwide organisation that promotes literature and freedom of expression. Last time I spoke about the limits of free speech in relation to books, films and video games, imposed by the Films, Video and Publications Classifications Act. Today I want to talk to you about another limit often imposed on free speech, hate speech. Recently, Paula Tesorero, the acting Chief Human Rights Commissioner, wrote an opinion piece in the Herald to address the speculation that the Human Rights Commission was campaigning to limit free speech. She was talking about the view that the Human Rights Commission wants to ban hate speech, notably that speech directed at identifiable religious groups in our community. The concern was that if the Human Rights Commission classifies speech condemning some religious groups as offensive, then this advantages those groups, for example, by signalling them out as being owed special consideration to the detriment of others. The specific example that was given by the acting Chief Human Rights Commissioner was that if the Human Rights Act is used to ban hate speech against Muslims, this may be seen to specifically advantage them, while simultaneously disadvantaging those from other religions from exercising their right to free speech. Hate speech has a problematic relationship with free speech. When human speech evolved probably around 100,000 years ago, it was likely followed not too much time later by speech being used to harm others. But hate speech is not about the obligation not to offend. It is about the obligation not to harm others or incite violence against peoples merely because of their demographic, whether it be the skin colour, gender, religious or sexual identity or other characteristic. This view is echoed by Tesorero when she states that the discussions the Human Rights Commission is having are aimed at opening up the dialogue about where lines can or should be drawn. She says we, that is the Human Rights Commission, strongly support the right to freedom of speech and expression and believe that there should be legal consequence only for cases at the most serious end of the spectrum, words or conduct that offend or upset or hurt people's feelings are not of themselves going to fall into this category. That is reassuring to hear, but there are still some significant concerns from the limits of free speech imposed by hate speech prohibitions. One of the under-examined problems between free speech and hate speech is that there is, at times, a double standard used by some who advocate for free speech in some cases, but allege hate speech in others to close down debate when that speech does not suit their particular agenda. In his book, Free Speech, 10 Principles for a Connected World, Timothy Garton Ash describes how in 2006, the then Secretary General of the Muslim Council of Britain, who once said death was perhaps too good for author Salman Rushdie, denounced the publication of the Danish cartoons of Muhammad, but scarcely a month later publicly declared that gays are harmful and spread disease. Abraham Voxman and Christopher Wolfe of the Anti-Defamation League in the United States argue that YouTube was right to leave up the Innocence of Muslims video, which they mildly describe as mean-spirited, but insists that Facebook should take down Holocaust denial because it's hate speech. Timothy Garton Ash's examples lead me to ask this question. If you belong to a group that uses the sword of free speech to condemn others, such as homosexuals or women, should you really be able to use hate speech as a shield to hide behind when that free speech is turned against you? These are the questions the Human Rights Commission will have to grapple with when it examines the question of hate speech. This is just one of the issues that PEN is monitoring this year. If you want to find out more about what PEN does and how you can be involved, follow the links to the New Zealand Society of Authors website to PEN, or contact me, Dana Wensley, at pen@nzauthors.org.nz.
I'm Galen Pound, and you're listening to Top Writers. My guest today is award-winning writer Marion Day. Welcome to Top Writers, Marion.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
Now, you grew up in a home with no books. When did you first discover reading?
Well, my parents were Dutch immigrants, Dad being captured and imprisoned by the Germans in World War II. We were poor in these early days, and I can't recall books at home. At five, I went to school speaking very little English, as we only spoke Dutch. We certainly would have read at school. However, I have no memory of books. But I certainly do after leaving school at 16. My first job was in a very busy bookstore in Apodiki. There were thousands of books all squashed up on the shelves, but I knew every single one. And my employer, Mr. Wood, left me to run the book division. If a customer wanted a book, it was always, "Where's Marion?" Mr. Wood also allowed me to purchase books with him. We had an educational children's section in a separate building where school teachers came to buy books for their libraries. He also bought me this old green bomb, which I loaded full of educational books and made selling trips to all the district schools. Of course, I had to read them all so I knew what I was talking about. But today, I can't recall any particular favourite. They were all favourites.
Right, now, can you remember the first book you ever read and the impact it had on you?
Well, I certainly remember the story of Little Black Sambo, the Indian boy who lived with his father, Black Jumbo, and his mother, Black Mumbo. And another one, The Snow Goose by Paul Gallico, which remains my all-time favourite and makes me cry each time I read it.
Still makes me cry today when I read The Snow Goose.
It's got that kind of impact.
Now, you've only been writing for the past 10 years. What made you decide to become a writer?
Well, to a certain degree, loneliness. Our cattle and free-range pig farm in the North Island required my attention 24/7, as my partner Steve was captain and training captain of the third biggest helicopter in the world. He was an international firefighter on a 3-week on and off rotation. I had to run the farm when he was away and still work it even when he was home. One morning, out of the blue, I woke Steve and I told him I wanted to be a famous writer. Goodness knows where that came from. He laughed. From that day on, rather than watch TV at night, I decided to write, and I certainly didn't know what I was doing. That came more with time and experience, and sometimes I still don't know what I'm doing. My editor and a proofreader can attest to that. 2 years later, we shifted to the Marlborough Sounds. It is here I began a love affair with writing. I couldn't stop myself. It eats me. I have to write. I can't switch off, and that's the driver for any success I may have achieved.
Right, now, writing picture books is quite different from chapter books. What tips would you give aspiring picture book writers?
I'd suggest read as many picture books as you can. You will sometimes see me hanging out at the picture book stand in a bookshop looking for successful formats. Then write. And writer's courses are beneficial. But on saying that, I've never been on one. I am self-taught and have a huge selection of textbooks on writing, including children's writing. At first, my picture book manuscripts were far too wordy. I would submit a story in an award, and now when I look back and reread my entry, I think, how on earth did I submit that? Embarrassing.
Now, your first children's picture book was Spiny, Sebastian, Starfish and released in 2016. And it's part of a series of nature books where children learn about nature through story. The latest in the series, which was published this year, is Pepe and Tutti, which is illustrated by Anna Evans. Can you please tell us a little bit about this series?
Well, it was a dream for me to write a nature book series. I realised how difficult it was to have a picture book mainstream published. And it didn't help that last year's New Zealand largest children's book publishers closed its door to all manuscript submissions and are still not accepting any today. I decided to invest in myself using the royalties received from my mainstream published books. Children's picture books are expensive to produce. I am also lucky due to my bestseller hunting biographies, Injun Joe and Blood Brothers, that I was able to secure a New Zealand distributor for the Nature series. This has been a huge advantage in getting the books into the nation's bookstores.
Now, you live in the beautiful Marlborough Sounds. How much does this environment influence your writing?
The isolation amongst outstanding natural beauty benefits my writing because it allows clarity of thought. But it's the surrounding nature that I love most and that influences my writing. The dive-bombing gannets, dolphins and sometimes cruising orca I can see from my windows, native birds, their birdsong and the bush-clad hills surrounding beautiful bays, native trees and a thousand other things. My characters are made up mostly from what I see.
It sounds like paradise. Now, can you please read a little of Pepe and Tutti for us?
Okay, I'll just read the back so you know what Pepe and Tutti are. Pepe is a beautiful forest ringlet butterfly. She only lives for 4 weeks, so she lays her eggs and asks Tutti the Tui to protect them. She flies away, never to be seen again. But things don't go to plan. What happens when the eggs hatch? Why is Pepe one of New Zealand's rarest butterflies? Pepe zoomed and zigzagged over the beech forest. She landed in a tree and opened her wings to the sun. How-do-do, how-do-do, warbled Tutti. Pretty, pretty. I have never seen a butterfly as beautiful as you. I am a forest ringlet, and very rare. Pepe launched into the air. Wait a bit, Tutti squawked. Can't, gotta go. I have an urgent job to do. Pepe paused at a kamahi tree, sipped some nectar, then landed on a tussock bush. Tutti followed. Are you really, really rare? He asked. Pepe sighed. Yes, there are only a few of us left. How sad, Tutti grunted and wheezed. No more time to chat, Pepe said. I only live for 4 weeks, so I must be going. She laid an egg beneath a tussock leaf, then another, and another, and another. When Pepe had laid 11, she called out, Tutti, please look after my eggs, then lifted into the air. We're going, Tutti sang. But Pepe flew away without a reply. Day after day, Tutti watched Pepe's eggs darken to a yellow-green. Then one afternoon, a wasp as small as a pinhead began circling the tussock bush. Even Tutti's eyes couldn't see it. Desperate to lay its own eggs, the wasp placed 6 of them right inside 6 of Pepe's. The eggs turned black, and 2 weeks after they cracked and out came 6 infant wasps. No, 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 Tutti flashed his wings in horror. 5, 5, 5, he cried. Only 5 butterfly eggs left. Inside their changing shells, the remaining forest ringlet caterpillars form. Tutti kept an eye on them as they squirmed and twitched, twitched and swelled. 21 days later, out they popped into the world. Over the moon, trilled Tutti from his perch. We're free, the caterpillars shouted. Tutti proudly watched on as they ate their eggshells for their first meal. During the day, the caterpillars kept their heads down, but at night it was time for their tussock feasts. They ate and pooped, ate and pooped, ate and pooped. But one day, while Tooty was perched on his branch, clicking and cackling his song, a fly arrived and laid its eggs on the tussock blades. "Watch out, watch out," Tooty screamed. "Don't touch, don't touch." But as the caterpillars crunched, chewed and chomped their way up the leaves, four of them each swallowed an egg.
Right, and if you want to know what happens, you'll just have to go and buy the book. Now, with any picture book, the illustrations are extremely important. And in Pepe and Tooty, they are just absolutely beautiful. How do you go about finding an illustrator, or does the publisher kind of appoint one to you?
Well, for my nature picture book series, I found my own illustrators. They seem to come to me in some way. It's quite uncanny. And I don't usually always use the same illustrator. I do love working with Anna Evans, who is a New Zealand wildlife illustrator and who illustrated Pepe and Tooty. Anna sees what I see. It's a great relationship, and she will be doing my next book in the series called Kōwhai Children, which will be due out next year.
Right, now your latest book, Skiddies, is illustrated by Robin Hogland. Can you please tell us firstly what skiddies are? Because a lot of people I asked didn't know.
I think it's more maybe a country thing, but it came from my country grandchildren who always ran around saying, "Uh-oh, I've got a skiddie in my undies," every time they got a fright over something. It's where the idea for the book sprung from, and Robin has done a brilliant job of the illustrations. I'm surprised at how 2 and 3 year olds just love the bright pictures, although the book is for older children.
For many children, this is a very, very uncomfortable topic. What was your reason for writing it?
I think there are some children who have problems with skiddies. Once they see how easily Mum deals with the situation, some of the stigma of being embarrassed will certainly be taken away. It deals with accidents in a humorous way. But the highlight of the book is big frights, big enough to say, "Uh-oh, there's a skiddie in my undies."
Right, now, children's books are notoriously difficult to get published, let alone distributed through mainstream outlets such as Whitcoles and Paper Plus. Yet this is something you have successfully achieved. What were some of the processes involved?
I think this is due mainly to my distributor and the sales team and the success they had with my adult biographies. They already knew of me, as did the bookstores. I think they took a chance on me, for which I am forever grateful. Plus, I think also that they see I'm not a one-off, that I keep producing books and that I'm here to stay. I always support our bookshops too. I buy print books and never read ebooks. It's just something I like to do to say thank you to the bookstores that support me.
Can you tell us a little about what the story of Skiddies is about, please?
Well, Skiddies is about Benji, who gets fright after fright, each one leaving with a skiddie. But Mum says, "No worries, she'll be right," and finds the most hilarious ways of solving Benji's problems. She washes them, dries his undies in the most peculiar places, in the possum drying shed, on the skids of the helicopter, on the antlers of the stag, and so on. When Benji finally blows his undies apart with a big he wakes up and realises it was just a silly dream. The story ends with Dad roaring up on his motorbike with a big skiddie on his pants because of the mud. But Benji knows exactly what to do to his dream. He grabs the water blaster and squirts Dad's pants, saturating him. It's quite a hilarious little book.
Now, I read it to some of my students, and the boys would like to know, please, how do you wash underpants in a concrete mixer without getting them dirty?
Because Mum washes them first and then throws them into the concrete mixer to give them a spin, so that she is spin drying the undies after the wash.
Right, I will pass that on to them if they're not listening. Now, the song you've chosen today is Dolly Parton's Elusive Butterfly. Why?
Well, Elusive Butterfly is about how you are most alive when searching and looking for something or chasing something. Pepe is elusive forest ringlet butterfly, chasing his own survival. And it is in this book we are also searching and looking for something, a rare butterfly found only in New Zealand and not often seen, and probably the most likely to become extinct. We must come alive when we hear of it, try and protect it, and if you ever see one, as mentioned in the back information page of Pepe and Tutti, please log on to the Monarch Butterfly New Zealand Trust website and let them know.
Right, let's listen to Dolly Parton's Elusive Butterfly.
You might wake up some morning to the sound of something moving past your window in the wind. And if you're quick enough to rise, you'll catch the fleeting glimpse of someone's fading shadow. Out on the new horizon, you may see the floating motion of a distant pair of wings. And if the sleep has left your ears, you might hear footsteps running through an open meadow. Don't be concerned, it will not harm you. It's only me pursuing something I'm not sure of. Across my dreams, with nets of wonder, I chase the bright, elusive butterfly of love. You might have heard my footsteps echo softly in the distance through the canyons of your mind. I might have even called your name as I ran searching after something to believe in. You might have seen me running through the long abandoned ruins of the dreams you left behind. If you remember something there that glided past you, followed close by heavy breathing, don't be concerned, it will not harm you. It's only pursuing something I'm not sure of. Across my dreams, with nets of wonder, I chase the bright elusive butterfly of love. Across my dreams, with nets of wonder, I chase the bright elusive butterfly of love. Across my dreams, with nets of wonder, I chase the bright elusive butterfly of love.
Thank you so much, Marion, for travelling up from the Sounds to be with us today. Marion's picture books are published by AM Publishing and are widely available. For more information on Marion and her other books, you can go to www.mariondayallonword.nz, and Marion is Marion. I'm Galen Pound, and you've been listening to Top Writers. A podcast of this program and upcoming events can be found on www.topwriters.co.nz.
Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this podcast available by funding the Access Internet Radio Project. Other great programs from Fresh FM are available through iTunes, the Stitcher app, the TuneIn Radio app, and our website, freshfm.net.